Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's out. Wonderful Monday morning coming in here. I, of course, am the best-selling author, The Gorilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio, NC Scout, and this is Radio Contra. Quick shout-out to the show sponsors, Genesis Gold Group. Genesis Gold Group, we have a bustling relationship that they are now partnered with Radio Contra, and I'm really, really excited about it, and you should be too. Don't just survive, but thrive with gold. So in this world of preparedness that we talk about, the things that we cover, and some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about in this episode today, we plan for the worst, but we hope for the best. And when it comes to your investments for survival and preparedness, the same principle applies. With Genesis Gold Group, you can diversify those investments and your savings with gold, the asset that will thrive even when economics don't. Gold is the money of kings. It's real money, right? Physical gold. That is physical security. And it's not that the value of gold is going up, by the way. It's the fact that the value of your dollar is going down. It's not just about surviving the financial storms. It's about thriving through them. Let's make this a part of our overall preparedness strategy. And you can find out a heck of a lot more at brushbeatergold.com. That is brushbeatergold.com. So also, brushbeater.store, we're going to be talking about a number of things that I have on the menu over there. Stuff that we have back in stock that is perennially, it's pretty crazy how it goes out of stock and we get stuff back. Anything that goes out of stock, by the way, we are normally going to have it back in a couple of days, talking about thermal, night vision, IR lasers, so on and so forth. Unless it's something that requires a lead time on production. Chess rigs, they should be in a little bit further into this month. The first run of them are coming in. They're going to be in Woodland M81 camo, and I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later in the episode. But, man, what a crazy weekend. Saturday night's all right for fighting, right? As Elton John would tell us. Great song, by the way. You know, just a little bit of that's one of those things that you'd probably never guess that I would be a fan of Elton John, but I am. I absolutely am. A little bit of pollen getting to me too. I spent most of the weekend in the great outdoors, enjoying life, enjoying family. It was a beautiful weekend. Everything is in bloom right now. All the vehicles are covered in that fine yellow dust that gives us all the sniffles and the coughs. You know, if you're in the South, you're here in the Mid-Atlantic, you're anywhere that has a lot of pines in our growing region or subclimate, you're going to know. You're going to know. So I'm a little stuffy this morning. That's all right. Sitting here sipping some incredible coffee. incredible coffee. Shout out to my buddy Anti-Pattern over on Twitter. He's got an interesting way that he spells it, but Anti-Pattern, who dropped off some incredible coffee. And it comes from a local company. I'm not going to say who it is. I don't even have the bag in front of me. It's totally off cuff. But great, great stuff. And so I know that you're going to hear that. And a big shout out to you. Still enjoying it. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to follow that up with. Doesn't matter that we had a heck of a good time over the weekend. However, I don't know if you saw this, you noticed it, whatever, but the threat of a wider regional war is now looming. Iran carried out a multi-layered strike on Israel Saturday night. Late Saturday afternoon. It was Saturday night for them. So this is significant for a lot of reasons. Of course, you know, we know in the Jewish faith that the Sabbath is occupied, or observed rather on Saturday. You know, whereas Christians, we generally speaking, we observe it on Sunday. And in the Islamic faith, the holy day is Friday night going into Saturday as well. So they carried it out. You have a day of prayer. You have a day of cleansing and, you know, in spirituality, and then you carry out your attack. This is pretty traditional across the board in the Islamic faith. This is kind of what they do. You know, if you read the Old Testament, this is pretty typical, right? This is pretty typical. History follows pattern here. Looking at it, the methodology behind the attack, it was multi-layered. They had the Shahed drones that were being utilized along with directed munitions as well. So it's fascinating to see how they conducted this. There was a few people over on Twitter and some of the open source channels that were saying that this style of attack mirrors the TTPs that the Russians have been utilizing against Ukraine. That certainly coincides with my observation as well. I don't disagree with that. Although I'm not the expert, I'm hardly the expert on the analysis of that stuff. But, you know, I do have some questions, though. I do have some questions. So, first, you have Turkey, our most duplicitous ally in NATO, that has said that any retaliation against Iran would immediately bar the United States from utilizing their airspace. That's interesting because we have a airbase there in Sirlik, and they are a NATO ally, at least nominally. They've signed to it. They are hardly an ally in practice, but, you know, that's another conversation that we could certainly have at a later date. But all things being equal, they carried out this attack. The Iranians carried out this attack. And interestingly enough, they only managed to hit one small military outpost that had almost no inhabitants around it. That was where the rounds that did make impact, and I do not have concrete evidence as to what those were. There's some reports saying that these were the testing of the hypersonic missiles. I haven't seen any evidence that supports that. And knowing a thing or two about the Persian order of battle, I highly doubt that they would be fielding those weapons just yet. In this phase of conflict, most of the threats were swatted down. From what I've seen, only a few rounds made it in and actually splashed. But it looks like to me, and I could be completely wrong about this, but this was not a surprise attack. This was certainly not a surprise attack. And fortunately, thank God, there were not any casualties that were reported. You know, thankfully. And that is what we pray for. Because we always pray for peace while preparing for war. But it seems like to me that this was a very limited, measured response with the intent of sending a message saying, we do have the capability of reaching you, and, you know, we're willing to come to the table, possibly, but that we do have that capability. It was a message, nothing further, nothing less. I do absolutely think also that there was a lot of negotiating happening behind the scenes. I think that Biden and the Biden administration not releasing too many statements about this and then declining to do a presser or even a briefing from the Oval Office, which normally when you have a conflict that looks like it could go nuclear and quickly, because it absolutely could. You have two nuclear armed belligerents who are now directly engaging one another. You know, the Israelis hit the Iranian consulate in Damascus, killed a number of officials. That is an act of war, by the way, in the international law community. That is an act of war when you do that. Now, the United States has done this too. Accidents do happen. Right? We hit the Chinese consulate once upon a time back when we were leveling Serbia back in the 90s. A lot of people don't remember that, but we absolutely did. Cooler heads prevailed from that, and there's a lot that goes into it. But it's my belief that the Biden administration and the pro-Iranian elements of the Biden administration, of which there are many, by the way, many cabinet members. You know, Valerie Jarrett, by the way, who is Iranian, has very deep ties to the primary players in this administration. And she's been the architect of sending them a lot of money, the Iranian regime, a whole lot of money, tens of billions of dollars. They did this under Obama. They're doing this once more under Biden. They just continued doing it. Right? They recently did this. So, you know, we know that Iran is funding elements that are directly engaging our forces, right? The Houthis, they're directly doing this. We know that they're doing this, and we're still sending them money, right? We're still sending the Israelis money. We're still sending money to all of these belligerents on, you know, seemingly multiple sides of conflict here. And I'm not really certain at this point what purpose that it's serving to the American people, other than to just grift our tax dollars away more and more and keep us into permanent status of debt slavery. You know, we do know, without a doubt, the Iranians are not on our side. They absolutely have bad actors here in the United States, and to at least a certain degree, they have political influence. You know, a lot of conversations in right wing, now far left wing and libertarian circles is the level of influence that Israeli interests have in the United States government. And, you know, that's absolutely a thing, right? It's absolutely a thing. Whether you agree, disagree, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. They absolutely have influence, right? And that is what it is. But it would be very ignorant to say that the Iranians don't also have a strong level of influence that runs contrary to the American people and the interests of the American people. So where I'm going with this is I think that there was absolutely some deals that were made behind the scenes that we'll never know about. Some political wrangling, negotiating. Fortunately, and this is one of those rare times where it didn't lead to a larger loss of life, and I'm thankful for that, by the way. I'm thankful for that. But, you know, what are going to be the longer term consequences here? And I think that there may very well be. This is yet again a symptom of the weakening of America's ability to project power abroad. And I don't mean that in the strictly military sense, right? Technologically, yes, we absolutely can, right? The problem is that we don't have the ability to exert that influence. I mean, if the tiger is busy swatting at every threat, he can't really carry out his own business, right? I mean, if you think about it, all things being equal, he doesn't have the ability to take care of himself if he's just swatting down every threat. If every other animal that might be a threat to him realizes that, hey, man, if I go mess with that tiger, he's going to tear my face off, so I'm not going to mess with him, right? That's the position you want to be in. And I think that position that the United States enjoyed for a long period of time, the American people, we've enjoyed that for a long period of time. Those days have come to an end. And this is just yet again another part of it. And, you know, all other conversations aside that people may have one way or the other, you know, this kind of looking, staying above the fray, the 10,000 foot level, it's a sad state of affairs. And, you know, along with that, the dehumanization that we see that seems to be endemic now on all sides of the political conversation, I think is tragic. Me personally, and that's just me speaking personally. I think the dehumanization that in that conversation that's being used on all ends of the political spectrum is absolutely tragic. But that, again, folks, that's the world in which we find ourselves. Speaking of dehumanization, we have in Sydney, Australia, yet another sudden jihad syndrome, it appears, on a Syrian archbishop. He's pretty famous in Australia. He spoke out against Islam, and although he is, according to some sources, he is a pro-Palestinian, which is interesting, but, you know, not surprising. There's a lot of Christians that live in the Palestinian regions, but anyhow, Coptic Christians, Assyrian Christians, you know, that are all Orthodox. But with that said, he was stabbed. Video is up. It's kind of went viral out there. He's stabbed multiple times by an assailant, Sydney, Australia. And this is coming after a mall attack, which, according to some sources, are saying that this is primarily a Jewish area of Australia. I wouldn't know. I've never been to Australia, so I don't really know anything about it. You know, other than Bluey, and you know, I can't. It's not like we're talking about something deadly serious. I throw in there a Bluey joke, but no. In all seriousness, though, you know, we've got a very serious problem that is manifesting there, and I think it's only a matter of time before we begin to see these type of Islamist attacks again here in the United States. We have Teamsters that are being taught to chant "Death to America" in Farsi. that is here in the United States. If you don't think that the Iranian proxies are alive and well and ready to raise hell, you're sadly mistaken. All right, you are sadly mistaken. And you have to remember, folks, they are in this for a long game. Americans, the American people, we have these just tiny little millisecond attention spans. And it's getting worse. It's getting worse. And you know, this is something when I've had Burlingame on in the past, we've talked about, you know, civilizational people, generational people who look at things in terms of our people lasting many eons, right? Many, many, many generations of our sons and daughters. The Western civilization doesn't look at things that way. We used to. We used to, and we will again, probably soon, but we do not now, and this is why these infiltrators have been able to gain a foothold to the degree that they have. Of course, they've been imported. The corruption of Western liberalism is squarely to blame for this. It is squarely to blame, and it has brought these people in. And, of course, they have no intention of assimilating to Western civilization, none whatsoever. They remain apostate to it, and this is what we see. These are always what the results are going to be. So, you know, until we get on top of that problem, and until Western civilization wakes up and realizes that there cannot be room for apostasy, and I don't care if you're religious or not, okay, I really don't. And this is not necessarily a conversation I want to get into because it's too broad, it's too deep. I've got some other stuff I want to talk about. But religion is the guidepost, if you will, to a civilization's underlying morality, right? It is the outward showing of it. You know, when you have Japanese civilization, Japanese culture, for example, Shintoism, Taoism, right? It is a codification of what that society values and how those values are maintained, the rigid structure in which they are maintained. It is an explicit statement that this is what we believe, right? Buddhism, you know, same thing. Christianity for the West and the East, by the way. In the East, that's frequently a forgotten piece of the equation, is that you know, Eastern Christianity is very, it's a very important thing to understand. And Western liberalism, which is a relatively new phenomenon, by the way, has flown directly in the face of that and has come to the point to where it has abandoned. It has abandoned its roots, and it has forgotten its roots, and it's forgotten that. And the times that it does mention religion, because Christianity is the basis for law in the West. St. Thomas Aquinas is the origin of legal philosophy in the Western legal system. All right, British common law, French Napoleonic code, St. Thomas Aquinas is the root of both. Right. Legal philosophers will tell you this. I mean, this is undergraduate level pre-law, by the way. But this is where this comes from. Now, we've evolved that thinking quite a bit, you know, bringing it to the modern day, Ronald Dworkin and H.L.A. Hart, and rule of recognition, so on and so forth. But with H.L.A. Hart's rule of recognition, you can distill it down to, and a lot of philosophers say that it's oversimplification, but you can distill it down to saying that if we all recognize that a rule is thus, and that it coincides with our underlying moral code, and this is for any civilization, by the way, as long as it coincides with that, then we recognize it as being law, and being a just law. And if not, if it is contrary to that, then we throw it out because it is contrary to the values and morals of a civilization. And in the West and in the United States specifically, that the root of that law is Christianity and the virtues of Christianity. Doesn't matter whether you're religious or not. Okay. And that is not a conversation, by the way, about state religion or Christian nationalism, which some of the pseudo-academics out there are just so fast to decry. Oh, no, those Christian nationalists. Oh. Right? Well, you're not able to see this because you are a liberal. You are a liberal. You are no conservative. You are no conservative, and you do not understand the roots of either word. Western liberalism is the root cause of the problems in which we see today. It is, period. End of discussion. And I implore some of you out there to explore what real conservatism is. And you'll understand some things. Right? You'll come to know a little bit of the wisdom of old and remove the blinders that have been placed on you, because our education system is based on Western liberalism. Several of the brands of Christianity that are out there are based on Western liberalism. They have been adopted for this rotten ideology. You know, one such example here, I you know, next thing that I want to talk about here. We have a pastor who is kicked off the stage at a big evangelical event. He's kicked off the stage after slamming a strip show. Pastor Mark Driscoll, evangelist pastor from Seattle, Washington, was kicked off the stage at a Christian men conference after criticizing a sword-swallowing performance at the event and alluding to it to being similar to something one might see at a strip club. This is coming from Newsweek by Kalita Rahman, senior news reporter. Right, Kalita Rahman. All right. The incident occurred during the Stronger Men's Conference, which was held at Great Southern Bank Arena in Springfield, Missouri, on April 12th and 13th. The event's social media pages describe it as passionate about helping men to become all that God has created them to be, which also included sword swallowing, apparently, which is has its roots in ancient Persian displays and Persian magic. Mark Driscoll was on stage when he began criticizing an earlier performance at the conference by sword swallower Alex Magala. During the performance, Magala took off his shirt, climbed a pole on stage, and swallowed a sword. Ooh. Driscoll would go on to say, "I've been up since 1 o'clock in the morning. The reason that I'm hoarse is I've been praying, and my heart is very burdened for you, and I want to be careful with this. It's not what I want to say, but the Jezebel spirit has already been here." And they kicked him off the stage. So, this quote-unquote religious conference has a sword swallower, which is Mesopotamian magic, right? This is a heretical display. And he calls it out. And rightfully so. And they kick him off the stage. It's not a religious conference. This is a rock concert. You know? This is, I'm not really sure exactly what to call it, but I can tell you that it is an abomination to the cross. You know? It's a sad state of affairs. But for those of you who are religious and are church going, as I am, you know, you need to have that conversation with your pastor or your priest on where they stand. Because Christianity, we you know, there's a lot of talk about Reformation and, you know, getting back to the roots, the orthodoxy of Christianity, you know, you need to have that conversation with your minister and your pastor and find out where they are. Because when we see Western liberalism infesting the church, where you see that, that is evil. Period. You know, regardless of denomination, regardless of where you stand on any of that, this is an abomination. Period. End of story. So, you know, it's just one more example. And, you know, buckle up. Buckle up, because here we go. You know, here we go. And it is certainly a sign of the times. The Western liberalism, which has given all of this an audience, is the vehicle by which the communist, the subversive, has undermined everything. And these events, these things, are nothing more than an outward showing of it. So anyhow, wanted to cover a couple of things, odds and sods that I saw pop across the radar this weekend. Of course, it was really big, and I'm sure this coming weekend is probably going to be interesting as well. Whole heck of a lot is you know, could be going either way, and we know for whatever reason, Friday just seems to be a big news day. I don't know why that is. Friday, Saturday, so they can entertain you on the weekend news cycle. So anyhow, rolling into the second half of the show, I want to share some field notes with all y'all. Things that I see coming across. This is a piece that I'm writing for the Guerrilla Dispatch Volume 3. But what I see people utilizing in class primarily, so kind of a weapons and equipment discussion. You know, equipping the modern Patriot rifleman with the best equipment while maintaining a certain level of a budget. And kind of where you need to spend your money and where you could probably save a little bit. And I'm really excited about writing this piece. I think that it's going to wake some folks up and kind of dispel some myths. And it'll probably, of course, shake the tree for a few other people because, you know, that is what we do. But I want to talk about the rifle. So primarily, and I've been teaching now professionally full-time since 2018. I have run the Scout course, and in its current incarnation as a three-day course, I've been running it since 2018. I've taught, I'll say probably close to 2,000 students now. So that's 2,000 trigger pullers who have come through and have learned first how to shoot, right? Because the first day we engage targets from 0 to 400. Sometimes a little further if the terrain allows it. But, you know, here at my range here in North Carolina, we get to 450, 450 meters. And everybody will get rounds on target, right? But I've been teaching it this way, and so that's just, you know, just I would say just under 2,000 ish, somewhere in that ballpark that I've taught, that I've trained. Day one, marksmanship. Day two, you know, the beginnings of small unit tactics, and then day three, they're conducting a large scale raid. All right, so you know, you're operating day and night, but really that foundation is laid by building the individual rifleman. And we do that in a day, right? One day, and we get everybody on it. And, you know, there's a lot of other programs out there, by the way, that do this. You know, shout out to the Appleseed program, because they've created a lot of riflemen at very low cost. And it is a good introduction to the fundamentals of marksmanship. Very, very solid. And everybody that I've worked with from the Appleseed community has just been incredibly great people, strong patriots, and you know, they maintain that same moral constitution that I think that we need in America going forward. So anyway, big shout out to them. But I wanted to distill down kind of the general purpose rifle setup that most people use and what I see as being most effective. And, you know, surprisingly enough, it doesn't really cost you a whole lot of money. So I want to caveat this with saying, you know, there's a lot of gear snobbery out there. There's a lot of people who look down their nose at certain brands, like this brand, that brand, the other. I'll tell you this, that I have high-end, very high-end equipment in some respects. I've got some very high-end, very expensive custom-built bolt guns. I have very high-end glass. I have, you know, some really expensive stuff that I could justify the cost in some respects on that, right? Even though these days they don't get the trigger time that they really deserve, that just is what it is. But there is a line to be observed there, right? I'm also a big proponent of inexpensive gear wherever possible. And there are a number of really great options on the market that are perfectly serviceable for not a whole lot of money. And there are ways to save money, because I think that your money is best spent on enablers. And I'm going to talk about this here in a little bit, right? So rifles, typically what I see people bringing, and this is the most common across the board rifle, is a 16-inch barreled AR-15. Most commonly, it is a nitrided barrel in either 1-7 or 1-8 twist. That is most common across the board. And a lot of people are buying weapons and they don't even know necessarily what their barrel twist is. You need to pay attention to that, though, because that's important, right? If you're just getting into this, you need to pay attention to what that is. What you're getting, the budget options from Palmetto State Armory and, you know, any of the others out there, because they got their own barrel turning facility in-house. But a lot of the others that are out there, that's kind of become the industry standard, is a 1-7. And that's going to give you the best twist rate for 55 grain to 77 grain. I strongly recommend you run 77 grain ammo. If you're shooting 5.56, run 77 grain ammo. Why? Because heavier is better, right? You need all the weight you can get. Now, that being said, I know that a lot of y'all are going to be buying at 55 grain cheap stuff because it's cheap and you look at price points on everything. And I totally get it. I totally get it. I got a lot of 55 grain ammo too, and that's practice ammo for doing range drills and everything else. It's just like with 9mm, shooting 115 grain. Would I stake my life to 115 grain full metal jacket and 9mm? Heck no. Not at all. That is not what I'm carrying, right? But, you know, I can't afford to shoot 147 grain jacketed hollow points, you know, flavor of your choice, every time that I go to the range to stay current on my pistol capability and my pistol skills, right? Can't do that. You know, and it's the same with rifle ammunition. You know, you have your range ammo that you're going out, you're practicing with, and then you have your business ammo, right? And so that's kind of the long and short of that. But typically speaking, people are bringing 16-inch guns that have some sort of free float handguard on them, which is really good to see because that accurizes the AR. Irons, the days of fixed irons, I think, are behind us. They're just obsolete. There is no reason in 2024, there is no reason not to be running an optic. All right. No reason not to be running an optic. Say it with me. All right. For all you guys that like iron sights are the hill you're going to die on, There is no reason not to be running an optic in 2024. All right. So the next thing I'm going to say might be a little controversial. There are a lot of excellent, inexpensive optics on the market. And for a daytime optic, I don't necessarily think that you need to be buying something that is ridiculously expensive. I just don't think that for most people, one daytime optic is going to serve you about as well as most of the others. As long as you're buying at a certain threshold and from a few brands that I'm going to mention. Now, I ain't talking about, you know, that airsoft piece of crap that you got off the shelf at, you know, Walmart or wherever, Cabela's, you know, wherever. No, I'm not talking about that, all right, that you know, sub-$100 category. That's not even in the conversation, okay? Primary Arms builds a great optic for a good price, right? Enough of them are out there. You know, is it perfect? No. But it is perfectly serviceable for people on a budget, right? Their LPVOs, perfectly serviceable for people on a budget. You're giving up some things, and I'm going to talk about that. Swamp Fox, another brand out there, and we have those. We have a full line of Swamp Fox optics at brushfeeder.store. I'm a dealer for them. Lucid is another one that's in the conversation. Vortex, with the Vortex Viper line, and the Strike Eagle line. I've got a lot of people with Strike Eagle optics that have come to class. Look, they're perfectly serviceable. Here's the difference, all right? You're going to give up in a little bit in terms of glass quality, right? Because, you know, there is no question. When I look through my Night Force, which is a 30mm, it's NX8, and I look through, a Primary Arms optic, one of their standard line or their silver line, whatever it's called, Swamp Fox, their 30mm options. Is it as good? No. But my Night Force is also like $1,800 and some change. Can everybody afford that? Is it worth that extra cost? In this day and age, I don't think so. And that's a controversial thing to say. I know a lot of people are going to hear that and be like, what? I really don't think that you're gaining that much. I just don't. Back before manufacturing was dominated by CNC machines, and you know, we've perfected the glass making process, there's a lot of manufacturers out there, non-Japanese, who are turning out some really great glass. The 34mm Warhorse series from Swamp Fox is incredible. I mean, the glass clarity on those is just really, really good. Shockingly good for its price point. I mean, you know, I've done box tests on them. You know, the ones that we've got here in the shop, I've done box tests on them. My demo model is currently sitting on a SIG Cross over here. And great optics, right? Excellent. Excellent optics. Now, again, long-term durability, you know, hey, I can't necessarily say, but, you know, just looking at it as this is a $500 optic and it's performing this well, the light gathering, light transmission, glass clarity, the eye box, everything about this thing is really good. And it's a first focal plane. I'm going to tell you, it's becoming increasingly difficult to justify spending that much more money for something that may only give me 10% better performance. It's just something to think about, you know, and I'm not saying right or wrong either way. You know, Swamp Fox is obviously not Night Force. It's not going to be Night Force, and they're not pretending to be either. But if you can get a strong level of performance out of something that is, 80% of the way there, but costing a fraction of the price, might be something you want to think about. Where you really need to pay attention is, and this is the primary source of problems I see with weapons in class, where you want to pay attention is to the mount. If the mount is trash, it doesn't matter anything else about the optic. All right. And I'm going to tell you this too. You need a gunsmith to mount your optic. Unless you just really, really know what you're doing, I strongly recommend you get a gunsmith to mount it. Just to make sure that it's level. Just to make sure that you're not binding the scope and the rings. That you haven't over-torqued it, which is also a problem. Can lead to some other potential failures there. Because, gunsmith gets paid to do it. They're professional. Know what they're doing. And mounting an optic is not particularly hard. But it is definitely something that you want to pay attention to. Because if you do it wrong, it doesn't matter what you do. You might get that thing zeroed, but it's going to start walking on you. You're going to have issues. You're going to have subpar performance. And I've seen people with very expensive optics have subpar performance out of their optics. Disappointing performance. And it's because they didn't mount the optic right. Or the optic, or the mount rather itself, was not up to par. These days, there's a lot of great options out there. I'm a big proponent of using steel, and aluminum is gonna work too. Steel on bolt guns typically because the recoil impulse is harder. But a lot of your cantilever mounts that are out there, they're real popular with LPVOs. On AR-15s are going to do pretty good. ADM makes great mounts. Bobro Machine makes good mounts. Badger Ordnance, of course, is excellent. And, in my mind, LaRue Tactical, Mark LaRue, you can love him or hate him, but you can't argue with the fact that he makes some excellent stuff. He absolutely makes some excellent stuff. And so I'm a big fan of those mounts. So pay particular attention to the mount. Now, the ones that we got from Swamp Fox are pretty damn good, too. I just think they're a little heavy for what they are, but they're solid. I would like to see one with a quick-release lever. But that's another conversation and, for another day. All right. But there you go. There's two ways that you can save some money right there based on what I'm seeing people bring to class. Daytime optic, because I don't think a daytime optic is... You're not gaining that much by spending a huge amount of money on another optic, right? Or a higher branded optic. I just don't see it. Now, the other side of that conversation. So we've talked about rifle, primary arms is perfectly serviceable, or Palmetto State rather, perfectly serviceable weapon. Their saber line is excellent, but even their Blim PSA guns, which I have several that we use as Op4 weapons and loaners, is when people come to the scout course, they're shooting blanks. Not everybody has an A2 flash hider, or some people's guns just don't run or whatever, and I'm going to be able to hand them a weapon. But those blemished PSA guns, they just shoot, man. They just shoot, and they shoot really well, and they're pretty accurate. I mean, am I expecting top-tier performance out of a weapon that, costs $400 or whatever they were costing at the time? PSA Blem guns? No, but they just run. They're extremely reliable. They hit the target every time, perfectly serviceable to 450 meters because, I've set them up, I've used it. All right. That rifle, LPVO, which is going to give you enough magnification for positive identification and observing targets, you know, at six power. I think six power is about the limit you really need to go with an LPVO. Can you go higher? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've got a 1 to 10 that is floating around out here, which is interesting. But 1 to 6 for an LPVO is going to be about optimum for light transmission, iBox, all of that stuff. When you go higher than that, you begin to run into some issues. So you're talking about a package here that is under $1,000, right? Under $1,000, perfectly serviceable rifle, very capable, right? You can engage targets in daytime, in the mesotropic times, for under $1,000 out to 450 meters. Definitely further than that, but that's just the standard at which we train here, right? So, you know, a lot of capability there for under $1,000. And then, you know, we could have a conversation about field gear and everything, but I want to talk about enablers. So that gives you the budget now to spend on your enablers. The first thing that everybody needs to buy is night vision. All right. I'm kind of on the fence. I've done shows where we've talked about night vision and thermal. But the first thing that people need to really buy is night vision. And if you're brand new to the night vision world, if you don't know what you don't know, and you're looking to get that first set, I've got options that literally satisfy every budget. The Gen 2 Wolf units, right? Wolf 14 Gen 2, absolute lowest price point unit that I carry, is a Gen 2. It's a second generation, and we've got the white phosphor ones that are in stock. Let's talk about this. So they're coming in at under $2,000. I did a video last night where we shot the video through it and got that posted up on Twitter, and it's over on AmericanPartisan.org as well. You can see a strong level of detail. And that was about 25% natural illumination, by the way. I live in a very rural area. There's hardly any light pollution. And, you know, we were out in the woods for this too, by the way. So everything's back in bloom and, you know, it's dark, but 25% natural illumination. And you can see pretty good detail. Is it my PVS 31s? No, not by any stretch. But said PVS 31s come in just under $12,000. You're talking about, and that's not affordable for most people, right? But most people also don't demand that level of performance either. And if you're just getting into the night vision world, that Wolf 14 is I think one of the best kept secrets in the night vision world. Now let's talk difference between Gen 2 and Gen 3. Gen 2, the light intensification tube inside of it, it's built around, is substantially dimmer, right? And so the level of detail that you're going to get with the complete absence of light is going to be relatively low, right? It's going to be relatively low. With a Gen 1, you kind of have to have an IR illuminator on all the time. But with a Gen 2, a Gen 1 technology goes back to World War II. I mean, we were using proto metascopes that had IR illuminators on tanks in World War II. You should look that up. You know, we advanced that technology with, they call it starlight scopes going into Vietnam. They had them in Korea going into Vietnam as well. They had made the scopes small enough to where they could mount them on M14s. It's kind of interesting. The deadliest sniper of Vietnam, Staff Sergeant Adelbert Waldron III, was an Army sniper from 9th Infantry Division. He was utilizing an M14 that was glass bedded, and a ANPVS-2, which was a starlight scope. He used that almost exclusively in the Mekong Delta. He did most of his killing at night. So that's an interesting point to take away from that. So with that said, that brings us to enablers. So night vision really is where that's the first enabler that you need, that you really require And for observation purposes at night, night vision is still going to be the king. Thermal is great, and I think that the technology is certainly getting there. But the one issue with thermal is it's power hungry, right? You're not going to get anywhere near the battery life that you're going to get out of night vision. But thermal is a different tool, right? Thermal is a completely different tool. Night vision really needs to be your first thing. Now let's talk about aiming with your weapon. So a lot of conversation floating around out there. The Ukraine stuff is contemporary, right? Because everybody's talking about Ukraine and some of the kvetching that I see when, you know, people start crying about how much stuff costs whenever you're having conversations about IR lasers, apparently, which is just bizarre to me. You know, why do they cost so much? Well, IR lasers cost what they cost for a reason. Then they say, well, but passive aiming, you know, in Ukraine, blah, blah. Look, you got to understand something about Ukraine. Ukraine looks nothing like the potential conflict that we're going to have here. It's a conventional war between two belligerents, an invading country and the defenders of a country. And it's a declared war. It's a conventional linear war. It's not an asymmetric conflict. People are in uniform, and the casualty rate is through the roof. You're not going to put, you know, optics and IR lasers and all these expensive enablers on every infantryman's weapon when the casualty rate is like 85%. You're not going to do that because you're going to run out of all that equipment quick, fast, in a hurry. You probably aren't even giving most of those guys nods and haven't been from what I've seen, right? When Russia invaded, that's why the guys that invaded on that first wave, they didn't have any of that stuff because they know that they're going to get killed. Why would you give them the technology? They're looking at it completely different than the American way of war, right? I'm not saying either way is right or wrong. I'm just telling you what they're doing. But the guys who are coming in behind that, the professional military, it's coming in behind that, are running all those enablers. And so there's been videos that have been made by, you know, different gun tubers and whatnot. They're trying to make sense of things. They don't know what they don't know either. Don't let them fool you. But when they say, you know, oh, they're not running IR lasers, well, things must have changed. Oh, there's this IR laser detector that Russians are wearing. Yeah, there might be. But we can do that with a lot of things. It's not that you throw enablers out because the enemy has a counter to it. You don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. You distill down how to work around that. And that always boils down to discipline. Okay. So when you are aiming with an IR laser, because guess what? Passive aiming, quote unquote, under nods. So if I'm wearing nods on my face, right, whatever they are, PVS 14, dual tube nod, whatever, all right, and I've got my weapon, and I'm trying to, quote-unquote, passive aim, that only works for CQB. I mean, in practice, that's CQB stuff. That's what you're doing. If you're real, real good, you might get a little bit outside that, but that's not really how it works. Right, you have to aim with an IR laser. And let me tell you, you can skimp on a lot of equipment out there, but an IR laser is the one thing that you really don't need to do that. And so these guys that are out there are like, oh, there's an airsoft laser that runs at full power. It's so good. I'm going to put it on my weapon. Blah. I'm going to tell y'all this. Don't just walk away from those people. Run. Run. And if there is any so-called, quote-unquote, tactical trainer out there that is telling you or advocating using an airsoft laser on a weapon, run far away from that clown. I'm telling you. The difference is, this is one thing that gets me really, really fired up, because you can save money on a lot of other things, but I'm telling you, if you want to go take the fight to the enemy at night, and we're primarily going to be fighting at night, by the way, because that's when, you know, overseas we did most of our work was at night. The IR laser is a very sophisticated piece of equipment that has certain build quality requirements to it in order to function. And because it is typically placed down near the muzzle of your weapon, there's a lot of shock that happens there. It has to be able to absorb that recoil. It's going to get knocked around. It's going to get banged up. And I'm telling you, I don't care what the power level of a laser is. I'm going to talk about this here in a second. Because the full power mode, by the way, is for marking targets for aircraft. That's why we do that. That's why the PEC 15, you know, and any of the things that have come after that have a high power mode. That's for marking targets for aircraft from the ground. That's why that is, in case you did not know. All right, so otherwise it's going to just completely wash out your targets at distance, and it's pretty useless, right? Anyway, my point here is that you need something that is built to withstand the rigors of actually moving to your target. You know, some jackass that's just doing ready up drills with his laser at night, you know, on a flat range, and then puts his rifle back in a neat Pelican case and whatever. He hasn't actually tested that thing. He hasn't actually beat it up. He hasn't actually drug it through the mud. He doesn't know whether it works or not. And so, you know, I'm sorry. That should be a red herring right there. And so when people say, oh, but yeah, but it doesn't cost much money. Yeah, okay, you're going to get exactly what you pay for. With an IR laser, you get exactly what you pay for. Promise. Bet. Now, does that mean that some of them on the market aren't ridiculously overpriced? Yeah, they absolutely are, bro. I'm telling you. Not going to name any names, but there's one brand I could think of that's $3,700, and it ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. But there are deals to be had. One of which, the Designate IR is really good. I got a video demoing that. Great unit. All right, great IR laser. And the IR laser, by the way, comes in at under $1,000. Now, if you need the Illuminator, and I did a test of the Illuminator model in the video, you know, that's going to cost you a little bit more. And that's a conversation I'm not going to dive into in this episode because we're running short on time. But just the IR laser, $895. You know, IR laser, visible laser. You use a visible laser to zero it. It makes zeroing pretty straightforward. That's where you want to spend your money. All right? That's where you want to spend your money. And so you're talking about, now you've got night vision. You're getting into the world of the night vision realm. Right? You can have a serviceable night vision set up for not a whole lot of money. Right? For not a whole lot of money. And so these guys that are out there that have like 10 AR-15s, you know, well, I'm going to hand them out when the time comes. You know, hey, you might ought to sell a few of those off. It's 2024. Okay. It is 2024. You absolutely need to be getting with the program of modernity, because I'm telling you, you know, for the Patriot Rifleman. And I saw a lot of the hand-wringing online, too, that people were, you know, oh, but stuff costs money, and blah, 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 but I don't think I necessarily need that. Well, you might not necessarily think that you need it right now, but there is going to come a point in time where you do. And I would rather have that capability. Because if you have a night vision setup, you definitely need a laser to aim, right? I'd rather have that capability in my arsenal now, even if, hey, I'm not using it, but I use it on a regular basis. I do use it on a regular basis, but I train with my gear. So that's how you need to look at it, right? Even if not, you get in a class, you learn how to use this stuff properly from professionals that have actually done this overseas, by the way. That's another qualifier. You know, I always ask, when have you done this? Right, when have you done this? If you're going to have an opinion, that's fine. Everybody's got one. Back it up with something. When have you done this? And if that answer is, crickets. Well, I'm sorry. You know, I'm not interested in your opinion, whatever it might be. You might have the best opinion on something in the world, but you can't back it up with experience. I did this here and it worked because of us. Well, you know, cool. Cool story, bro. Anyway, wanted to shed some light on that because I think there's a lot of nonsense that gets put out there. There's a lot of brand elitism that happens. And then, you know, on the reverse side of that, there's a lot of BS too. A lot of the brand elitism, oh, you got to spend this much money or you're not capable. Yeah, I don't think that's valid at all. And then on the other hand, there's the guys that, you know, well, I just bought this because it was cheap and it checked a box. Well, and you're going to get that. All right. That's not where you want to be. You do not want to be that guy. All right. You do not want to be that guy. There's a happy medium in there. There is a happy medium. And so with that said, going to be adding a night vision course to the calendar for late summer. Right now, it's going to be looking like late July. That last weekend in July, we're going to be doing it. It's going to be two nights. I don't have it on the calendar yet, but it will be added. I'm probably going to get it up there today. Where we're going to be doing that. And guess what? Here's the kicker. If you don't have night vision, all right, if you don't have night vision, don't fret. You know, it's not a requirement to own any of these things to come to class. You can use my gear because I would rather you utilize proper setups, learn how it functions, get good with it, get proficient with it, learn how to zero this stuff, learn how to manipulate things in your working environment, learn how to drive under nods. That's going to be one of the training goals as well. You know, I've got some off-road vehicles that we utilize around here. You're going to be driving under nods. And, you know, some of the concerns therein that go along with all that. And to give you yet another tool in the toolbox, right? Yet another experience, yet another feather that you can put in your cap and say, hey, I did this, I got familiarized on this, so that you have the ability to introduce others that maybe don't have that capability, don't have those means just yet, but they're absolutely going to need those skills out in your community. I'm telling you, all of this stuff is absolutely going to make a difference. Brushbeater.store/training calendar. It is up. Brushbeater.store for all of your night vision, thermal, IR lasers, so on and so forth. All of those capabilities and a heck of a lot more. Got communications fully restocked on freeze-dried food as well. And we've got some pretty exciting products we're going to be adding to the lineup going into the late summer. Chest rigs are inbound now. I'm really excited to get these kicked out of the door because they're hotly anticipated. And I'm really, really excited. So anyhow, with that said, folks, God bless. Stay safe out there. Keep your heads on a swivel. Don't trust what the media is telling you because the game is certainly afoot. Talk to you again very, very soon. This is NC Scout, out.